Okay, I would start us off then. Thank you.
Okay, I'll start off. Thanks for the talk, Paddy. As Brian says, extremely stimulating. Love your courtroom analogy at the end. Worth using again, that. I suppose what may be worth mentioning with regard to the way the party has dealt with this question over the years is that the party's sort of view of the person who you mentioned in a sense as being the founder of the environmental movement, Rachel Carson, with Silent Spring. No, nothing in the 60s on Rachel Carson, but you know, it wasn't an issue that was being sort of widely talked about, not as now. But you did mention the article written in 1971, which is a brilliant statement of the party view on ecology. Still is that article called "Ecology: The First Decade," I've got it on the screen in front of me. Really, the first paragraph says that 10 years ago, anyone who spoke of the balance of nature or claimed that our food was being poisoned on a mass scale would have been classed along with nudists, vegetarians, and socialists. Such talk identified the crank and the weirdo. As for ecology, few could even spell it. Today, fad has become orthodoxy. The language of the crank has become the language of the Pope, the Prince of Wales, and President Nixon. Every school child knows the meaning of ecology. This was in 1971, so in many ways, the party was sort of prescient in sort of talking about this then. And okay, it didn't get a hold of Rachel Carson right away, but it did eventually, and has done sort of many times since. I think what this article shows, I'm trying to say, is that there is a way of talking about the environment, and you know, since then the you know, the climate emergency, as they call it, which takes in, as it were, our view of the world and how the ecological crisis that that the world is in fits in with, and indeed can only be solved by the case that the party puts across. Thank you.
Thank you, Owen. Next, I want to speak to you is Paul Edwards. Thank you, Paul.
Cheers, comrade. Yeah, nice, lovely, absolute genius yet again, Paddy. Terrific, brought back some fond memories of all those Q&As that we done in the early days on Discord and how enjoyable they were. And obviously this is no exception, albeit a pretty tragic and terrible state of affairs. I think as a party, we've never really been one to focus on single issue affairs, single issue matters. Perhaps that's a good thing, maybe it's not. I think with this is a slightly different state of affairs now. I think because generally the public, it's tangible. You can see, you can feel. You've only got to switch your television on any time of day or night, or the radio or whatever. You can actually sense altogether the reality of what is happening. You know, even in Canada just now, we're seeing record-breaking high temperatures, people dropping like flies, and then, you know, in America, the storms, you know, so there's really no escaping it. And I think people are generally starting to live in fear of the direction that it's going in. And as such, you know, that can have impact as having them to question. You certainly like to think they'd be questioning the root cause of the problem. And that's, I think, where we step in by, you know, attending the sort of events and rallies that you mentioned and steering people along in that general direction. It's never going to be easy, not least of all because we have so few resources, but, you know, just getting active and getting out there and producing all the leaflets and thing. I've got really high hopes for this COP26, particularly if we can get we can get some media attention, which I'm pretty confident we will do. And that's something, as Brian rightly says, we've got the COP26 meeting coming up a week Sunday. And hopefully, you know, those who fancy coming along and getting involved, in then the more the merrier. I'm actually having a meeting with Glasgow branch on Tuesday night just to try and develop a strategy for that. But certainly everything is in place. We're moving in the right direction. And I certainly think that the important thing is to persuade people that, you know, not that I don't think they take any persuading that climate change is very, very real. You need to be off your trolley to think otherwise. You hear Trump and all his cronies, some of the nonsense they talk, and flat earthers and such like. But, you know, each to their own. I think, as you rightly say, Paddy, what really matters is getting people, as with everything, realising most common denominator for all of these kind of issues fundamentally is the nature of the social system that we live under, and that is predominantly, if not entirely, but certainly predominantly the cause of the way things are going. And getting that message out there is above all probably the most important, single most important thing, and I guess that we as a group and a party are the ones to do it. And it's just trying to find that right connection and, you know, persevering with it until one day people actually start to appreciate and understand the party case. Cheers.
Thank you, Paul. No other voices appearing in speaking queue as yet. Right. Paddy, have you got any comments to make on the last two questions?
Hello,
Edward Paul.
Yeah, well, just on what I mean, Howard's right, of course. We did pick up on the ecology movement, you know, in the 70s. So, but I think the growth of it is something that, like everybody else, you know, we didn't really anticipate. And, you know, we have moved with the times. You know, I'm certainly not saying that we've ignored the subject. We haven't at all. I think there's probably more that we could do. I mean, for example, you know, we could think, if we could find a writer, you know, having a regular column in the Standard on this subject, exclusively on it. New flyers, maybe an updated pamphlet, a special web page on that. In fact, we're going to try and construct a special web page for COP26 so that we've got something to point people at in November. But just on something else, I sat in on a online event on climate yesterday. A New Scientist ran it, and you know, where they had a panel of experts answering questions. And as I've noticed before with these things, and also with my failure to get letters into the letters page, there's a sort of complete disconnect between, you know, discussing the sort of scientific basis of climate change, and then kind of really overlooking the role or the failure to act by governments. You know, this is where scientists feel that it's kind of ultra vires, you know, it's sort of beyond their scope to discuss a political issue. Although, having said that, I was quite annoyed that they were quite happy to include an interview with Mark Carney not so long ago. Adam wrote a sort of bit of a refutation in Cooking the Books on that. You know, they're quite happy to include some capitalist banker. I did say banker. And, you know, but they won't interview environmentalists who are raising the question of capitalism itself being the problem. I'm thinking particularly of George Monbiot as a fairly high-profile person who's now said that capitalism itself is the problem. You know, where's his interview in New Scientist? And this is what I think is this is why I think if we don't get in there, if we don't make our case, nobody else is going to do it for us. Absolutely not. Okay, anyway, that's it.
Thank you, Paddy. And I think can we start to fill up a bit now? Next, have we got Dougie? Thank you.
Hi, I mean, it's interesting talk, Paddy. I mean, we've talked about this ourselves together But I mean, I think one of the things socialists fail to do sometimes when they put forward socialism, the inequalities in the world. I mean, Tanzania, if somebody's from Tanzania, the energy they use in a year is used by a European in 2.5 days. And the same in America, it's even worse. It's about 0.5 days. So there is a gross inequality. And it's difficult to imagine a world where everybody has a European or an American lifestyle. I know not everybody in Europe and America has a good lifestyle, but the pandemic has shown up the divisions between the rich countries and the poor countries in terms of the vaccine, really, you know, and they're refusing to waive patents to let other people be vaccinated in the world, which would save probably millions of lives, really, you know, the way things are going. So it's difficult, really. I think we have got something to say on the environment. And Montebu, I mean, he says capitalism wants to double, you know, GDP every 14 years. And like, it's unsustainable, really, you know. That's in the West. It's probably even higher than that in places like China, really, you know. But, I mean, I'm not sure if we could have a world of so-called abundance. Maybe Star Trek could do that, but we're not going to get Star Trek anytime soon, really, you know. We can certainly have a world where everybody's fed and have proper housing and things, but I mean, having a Western lifestyle for everybody in the world is just not possible. We need another few planets, really.
If I could just respond to that, Brian. Just to agree with what Dougie said. I remember reading that one American uses the same amount of resources as 19 Ethiopians, and one European equals 15 Ethiopians. In the New Scientist event yesterday, the question of population control came up. Lots of people asked, how can we control the population? So there's this kind of enduring myth that population is the problem. But here the scientists did actually deal with it properly. You know, they pointed out that it's not population, it's resource use by the population, and that goes up with income and affluence. So, of course, Westerners are using tons more resources than, people in Ethiopia and Tanzania and places. So, you know, there are big problems out there. People think that, climate change is being driven by population growth. In fact, one of the researchers from Sweden pointed out that the rate of population increase has it's still increasing, but the rate of increase has halved since 1960 today. So, and would be an actual decline if it wasn't for certain sub-Saharan countries. So, this kind of population myth is a real barrier to people's understanding of what the issues are. When you mention world of abundance, I think this is something we have talked about previously. And, I think some people are still happy to use the term abundance. I think it's misleading. It sounds like we'll all have rocket ships and eat sort of ridiculous luxuries all the time. I think sufficiency is probably a better term, but we've had that discussion before. Anyway, that's enough from me.
Thank you, Paddy, for that. Next, we've got Mike Foster. Okay, Mike.
Thank you. Yeah, and thanks for your thought-provoking talk, Paddy. I think you've really hit the nail on the head, and you've highlighted something that's quite important that we need to sort of run with. And and as you say, you know, the COP26 event, and before then articles in the Standard, you know, that's all, you know, where we should channel quite a bit of our energies. With the point I was going to make, Dougie got there first. I was going to raise the question of our advocating a world of abundance and how we can square that with the kind of sort of shortages or changes in lifestyle that could come as the environmental destruction gets worse. And I suppose there, our argument is sort of similar to the reform, our argument against reforms, in that, you know, we'd say that, yeah, some reforms can make things temporarily seem a bit better, but, you know, don't get to the crux of the issue. And so the same old problems keep arising. And, you know, in the same way, we could argue that, you know, sort of green taxes or other environmentally motivated reforms will sort of suffer the same fate as more directly economic or social reforms. So, yeah, that could be one way that we could adapt our argument so it's more focused on environmental issues. Yeah, so, yeah, that was the thought that popped into my head. But, yeah, I think, yeah, we need to clarify our what we mean by a world of abundance and how realistic that could be. Of course, our point is that a socialist society would be more efficient and with less environmental impact. And, you know, again, that's the argument we could take. But, yeah, I think that's something else we need to focus on along the way. Yeah, cheers. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Mike. We next want to Adam. Okay, Adam.
Okay, thanks. I just wanted to take up something that Dougie said, in fact, to challenge it. This business of the European uses up 50 times more resources than an Ethiopian. I mean, the way they calculate this is to take the GDP and divide it by the population. But I mean, that includes all the waste of capitalism, all the bureaucracy of capitalism to do with finance, all the waste of military and so on, and that is attributed to the people living in that part of the world. It's not used, in fact, to sustain the standard of living of people. You know, the food, clothing, shelter, and housing. I mean, it's not that is using up resources. It's as I said, the whole superstructure, wasteful superstructure of capitalism. So I think it's misleading to use those figures in a socialist society. But we wouldn't have this waste. People could still consume the same sort of things that they are consuming now, you know, more and better and more long lasting. But this sort of talk, you know, sort of blaming people, when in fact it's the system. Anyway, to come to the theme of the talk about what are the limits to capitalism, if there are any. I mean, we've always argued that there aren't any economic limits to capitalism. It's not going to collapse. Of a shortage of markets or of foreign rate of profit or something like that. But I mean, I think we have discussed in the past whether there are non-economic limits to capitalism. And, Paddy's made the point that there could well be. But I think, to come to the defense of Marx, the premise of Paddy's argument, which is quite reasonable, is that capitalism is committed to unlimited growth. But to explain why capitalism is committed to unlimited growth, you need to understand economics, in particular Marxian economics, which explains that capitalism is a system of capital accumulation, and that that's what it is, and that's why capitalism is committed or has to have unlimited growth. So I think we can't avoid going into the economics of the thing, because a lot of other people think that capitalism can be reformed. And that growth can be slowed down or become sustainable. All that. I mean, our argument is that it can't, and it's based, as I said, on Marxian economics. But one final thought: what will happen to the world if, in fact, socialism isn't established within the next 100 years?
Could I ask
that, Adam?
Yeah, I didn't catch that last question.
Adam, could you repeat it, please?
Yeah, sorry, this must be the reception here. I mean, supposing that in fact capitalism continues, and socialism isn't established, I don't know, by the turn of the century or the middle of the next century, what is going to happen? I mean, will are we saying that civilization will collapse? It wasn't my main point, incidentally. It was just an incidental point at the end of what I was saying.
Can I just come back on that in a sec? Three interesting things there. You were saying that the way that they work out resource use is an unreasonable way to do it. They divide the whole population into GDP. I think on that basis, what we should be looking at is what's a better way to work these things out? Can we do it ourselves? Because if they're doing it wrong, we should find a better way to do it. I can sympathise with what you're saying, Adam, because sometimes you see on some sort of, you know, you're going to love me for saying this, Adam, incidentally, but on some vegetarian vegan sites, you see very dubious statistics about how much water it takes to produce meat. And what I found out, or on some sites anyway, is what they do is it's just by divide the number of cows by the amount of rain that falls on a field annually. Well, that rain would fall on that field whether or not it had any cows on it. So it's that kind of calculation that you're talking about that's a bit bogus. Well, we just need to do better calculations in that case, and I think we could. On your other point, to understand why capitalism relies on infinite growth means understanding economics. I totally agree. It does mean that, and we shouldn't be avoiding that. That's actually our strongest argument, is what I'm saying. So I'm not saying, people don't want to learn Marxist economics, therefore let's not bother with it. No, I'm not saying the opposite. They don't want to bother with Marxist economics. They have to bother with it. We need to explain it to people, but we just need to do it in language that people generally can get, whereas often we don't. We talk in a sort of rather dry academic style. So that's my point. And the last thing is, what would happen if capitalism continues for another 100 years? I think that's a really good subject for an article or a set of articles, actually. That's a really good idea. Let's ask it.
Sunday party. We'll recite again. Next is Joel. Joel?
Hello. Somebody spoke about more people having a Western lifestyle. Did I hear that right? Or querying that? I think for anybody in the world, I mean, the least that people... should be having is, as we've stated all along, is good housing, clean water, obviously food, and decent clothing. And that's the least, I suppose, anybody in the world should be available to him. So, the Western lifestyle at times, I mean, I think you have to question it as well, don't we? Sort of some of the things that happen. But, it was just that point about Western lifestyle. The basic thing we should be having is where people feel comfortable and don't feel threatened, et cetera, et cetera. Thank you.
Just to come back to that briefly, Joel, I think the thing about people wanting a Western lifestyle, I think what's been happening over the last 20 or so years is that there's been a huge amount of growth in Asia, particularly China, but also Southeast Asia, Malaysia, and places, these sort of places. And with that increased sort of level of income has not surprisingly, I suppose, you know, they've looked to the West and said, well, what have they got? Well, we want that. So they've tended to kind of emulate the West in terms of diet and lifestyle. So they all want cars. They all want red meat every day. They all want air conditioning, central heating. Basically, all the things that we think of as a Western lifestyle, we think of as the norms in a Western lifestyle, which, you know, billions of people around the world can't have or have not been able to have. Yeah. As soon as they get the money, well, of course they want those things. And this is the point is that Dougie was making, is that if you gave that sort of lifestyle to everybody on the planet, you'd need about three planets, you know. So clearly those things have got to be looked at.
Yeah, no, good point. Thank you.
Okay. Next in the speaking queue is Mark. What do you
want? Hi. Yeah, I was hoping, I didn't really want to say anything tonight, but I was fairly, really moved by what Paddy said. And I just wanted to say thank you, Paddy. That was a tour de force. That was very convincing. It was awesome, full of quotable material. I've written down that capitalism has been easier to endure than to change. Brilliant. And that now we're having to change what we can no longer endure. Yeah, really, really, really good. Very eloquent. And I'd probably be a little bit disjointed, but I have some sort of comments I want to make. They may not be very well put, but I'll try my best. I mean, one of the things I think about is you were talking, Paddy, about, you know, how we can sort of adjust the way or the framework of the message that we give, or how much do we root it in class politics. I know that a lot of, let's say, when we start talking about Marxist economy, one of my favorite subjects, and I think probably we all have had to grapple with it, is the whole issue of the labor theory of value, to try to show the worker that they're actually exploited under capitalism, that it's not a fair deal, it's not an equal bargain, et cetera, et cetera. And that was a lot of what a lot of the emphasis of what Marx was doing in Capital. I do actually wonder, although I am very interested in that area, I do actually wonder about its value in the light of, let's say, what you've said. Whereas another part of what is in Marx is that exactly what was that Adam mentioned, this the why capitalism has to have unlimited growth. It's the profit is profit is the law and the profits. You know, this vampire that sucks out the blood of the worker and of course the blood, we may say, of the planet, because it is so rapacious. Maybe we need to focus on that element of demonstrating this inability of capitalism to actually moderate itself. I suspect that many people, probably, like, even if we were on the Titanic heading towards the iceberg, we would still hope we might miss that thing that we're heading for. I reckon that many people are going to be secretly hoping that we'll be able to just change things a bit. And I think a lot of corporations and everything will be trying to persuade people that they are changing things a bit. There was a interesting news piece in ITV, of all places, showing the wastefulness of Amazon, throwing away, you know, taking the dumpsters to landfills, new products. And ITN wrote to Amazon, and Amazon wrote this email saying, we are striving to attain zero wastage, and we do not use landfill sites in the UK, etc. So it was at the same, they were actually shown on TV to be lying, and they're lying quite happily in their public relations stuff. Another thing I was thinking was about thinking about how the Socialist Party and we as socialists can relate to the environmental movement. I think, and I don't quite know how to put this, but there is what we could have one approach, which is we are basically interested in socialism, and here are some good arguments for socialism, like as though socialism was our fascination per se. We would like to have a better organized society. We've been banging on about that. You haven't listened to us about the issue of workers' life, the quality of lives. But now we've got a better argument, which is the planet is going to burn. So now we do need socialism. I just wonder whether that approach, which I think would be quite natural, and I'm sure that it would come out of me quite naturally, could be quite a turnoff to people. You know, because people, you know, there's a difference between saying we're in favor of socialism and we're looking arguments to prove it to people, so they'll finally accept that socialism is the best form of society, rather than saying, you know, we're on a sinking ship and we've got to, you know, whatever, I don't know, build a new one. I don't know what that argument is. Anyway, that's it.
Yeah, just to come back in on that. You said some good things there, Mark. You were asking about different aspects of, you know, Marx and economics. So what is it that we need to stress? What do we need to emphasise? What maybe we don't need to emphasise as much? You were asking about, you know, labour theory of value, workers are exploited. It's possible to express these ideas in fairly simple terms. You've only got to remember, you know, Robert Tressel and his money trick in Ragged Trouser Philanthropists. Sometimes these things aren't that hard to express. We don't need the world's population to go and read three volumes of Capital. Or if we do, we're really in trouble. The thing about capitalism being a sort of vampire on workers and on the planet, it occurred to me that we're lucky that we're not the only people saying this, not by any means. You know, we're a tiny voice in a loud chorus of people saying this sort of thing. There was a few years ago, there was a whiteboard video called "The Story of Stuff." I think some people here will have seen that. Makes a very good sort of argument to show that, you know, just the production of stuff on and on and on, and the resulting waste is an unsustainable human activity in its own right. The idea that, you know, the fact that Amazon are dumping products in landfill doesn't, you know, is not going to come as much of a surprise to people, although it is quite shocking when you see it. I sort of agree with the argument when you say that, you know, putting the argument that the world's going to burn is going to turn people off. I think that's right. I think it would turn people off because I don't think that we should say that the world's going to burn, but I think that we should say that capitalism will not stop trying to burn it. It will go on and on until we stop it. And going back to that thing of Adams is about, well, what would the next 100 years of capitalism look like? Well, I think we could make some pretty strong predictions. Species are going extinct at a rate of knots. You know, not for nothing are we talking about the great Anthropocene extinction, mass extinction. I think that undoubtedly that is going to continue, with deforestation. And the melting of the tundra peat and these sort of things. So I think it's fairly sort of standard stuff now. So I think we can. We should avoid saying that, which some people have been saying, that, you know, it's going to mean the extinction of the human race, because I don't think that's true. And it's not going to be the destruction of the planet. We don't even have the technology to do that. The planet will survive. Humans probably will survive in some form. But whether it'll be a sort of an advanced form in capitalism, I think it's highly debatable. So we're not trying to scare people, but I think when you said, look, we've got an idea, let's do this instead, this would work. I think that's what we've got to concentrate on. You're right. That's me.
Thank you, Paddy, and thank you, Mark, as well. Next up is Steve. Hey, Steve.
Good evening, comrades. Just to back up a little bit what Paddy was saying, I think a couple of people got the wrong idea from what Paddy was saying. He wasn't talking about giving up the idea of a class struggle. This is central to our argument, and I know that Paddy goes along with that. But a couple of things that I think we should stress is that we as socialists, we're not ecologists, we're not environmental scientists or anything like that, and we should definitely steer away from this idea that if we don't get socialism, capitalism is going to destroy the biosphere as far as human beings are concerned. We don't know that. What we do know, as intelligent or semi-intelligent adults, is that the scientific opinion is that we're in an extremely dangerous situation. So we don't need to go into that with people who are involved in the environmental movement. We could say that that's a given. But the one thing that does that does differentiate us, our unique selling point, sorry for the term, is that we've got this economic criticism of capitalism, which other organisations do not seem to have. They do, for example, if you look at the Green Party, these people are talking about a local type of capitalism, a petty capitalism, if you like, a petty capitalism that involves, by the way, I just noticed this the other day, that involves women entrepreneurs. So there's extreme amount of confusion coming from probably what is the main environmentalist party in this country. They're absolute economic cretins. So having said that, we need to push the case against capitalism, but not to the extent of saying, if we don't, it's going to burn the planet. I don't agree with that because it's not a scientific approach from our point of view. Or sorry, it's not even an empirical approach from our point of view. Secondly, what we ought to point out to people that are involved in environmental issues is to ask them, why do you think this has become such an issue in this country? And you've got to look at the economic interests of the industrialists that are looking to make money out of, I don't know, carbon capture, electric vehicles, and all this sort of thing. These are the people that are pushing this that are pushing forward this idea. What we're not talking about, for example, and to sort of go with that argument. Why are we talking about this issue all the time? Why the fuck are we not talking about the fact that there are millions and millions of tons of atomic weapons, megatons of atomic weapon power from these atomic weapons that are pointing at us, which is equally and possibly even more of a direct threat to human existence? We're not discussing that. So there is a background, like with this idea about identity politics, there is a background of economic interest that is pushing this agenda, and we ought to be telling people in the environmentalist movement that this is the case, whereas there is not some sort of economic incentive to push a disarmament policy, for example. Yeah. So just looking at it. Okay. Right. I think I've probably blathered enough, so I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Right, Moggy, you've got a question.
That was a wonderful talk, and we've had some very interesting feedback. I'm sort of going back about 20 minutes ago to the problem of talking about places being overpopulated, but they don't need to be because we've got enough space for everybody. But the thing is, it's not just the case of accommodating a lot more people on the planet. And as somebody said half an hour ago, there's no problem with supplying people with what they need. I think a lot of the problems that we have is that one thing that is not being kept up to date with is the disposal of sewerage. Now you can have a bigger population, and you can feed them and you can supply them with all the material things they want. But a lot of countries are not sufficiently dealing with the disposal of sewerage, and it's ending up in the sea and causing a lot of rubbish and a lot of poison and pollution. And I think that's something that's got to be addressed. If you want to increase the population, you've got to also be aware of the fact that there's a lot more sewerage that has to be disposed of. And I've seen that in the 50-odd years I've lived in New Zealand. When I came to live out here in the mid-1960s, we had a population of 3 million, which doesn't sound very much. You know, a lot of European cities have got more population in one city than we had in the whole country. But in the 50-odd years I've lived here, it's almost doubled. We've got over 5 million people now. But the problem of the disposal of sewerage is not kept up with the population growth. And I think this is what's causing a whole lot of problems, particularly for stuff ending up in the sea. So that's what I've got to say on it. Thank you.
Thank you there, Moggy. Subject there pretty close to my heart. I just need to point out as well that the problem is not just with human sewerage, but also with animal sewerage. And you've got quite a problem then in New Zealand with that lot. Next in the queue is Howard. Howard, over to you.
Thanks, Brian. Just to take up something Steve said a couple of minutes ago, he mentioned the fact that the wastage, for example, that's involved in the mass production of weapons of one kind or the other. Why doesn't the party focus on that rather than focus on the environment? The fact of the matter is that flavour of the month at the moment is the environment rather than sort of mass production and potential use of weapons. But the fact is that the party, you know, does, when he gets the chance, have something to say on both these issues, as on all sorts of others which are raised by the way that capitalism works and produces goods and services. On the specific issue of the environment, we are, as Paddy said, we're only there's this mass of voices now critiquing capitalism's production of stuff and the way it produces it, and you know its irrational use of resources. We are a tiny voice in that. He's right, but there's no reason why we shouldn't take advantage of the situation, a situation in which, for once, if you like, people may well listen to us. Paddy mentioned that I forwarded to him that list of books and articles, which actually came to me via Italy, because I'm on the email list of an Italian so-called eco-socialist organization. I get all their material, and this very day, and people can find this on the where is it? It's on the useful links, I think. If you click on that, you'll find this thing called an eco-socialist starter kit, and there are 20 different books and articles, mainly books produced in recent years, which constitute a powerful critique of capitalism, the way capitalism produces. The trouble, of course, is that most of these critiques don't go a lot further than critiquing. They don't say, and therefore we want something absolutely radically different. Some do, actually, but they somehow sort of miss our case and suggest other things which actually, when looked at closely, are what I think somebody, Mark Showerty in his talk last week, called More Capitalism in a somewhat different form. But if you look at the titles on that list, Green Capitalism, Why It Can't Work, The Ecological Rift, Capitalism's War on the Earth, creating an ecological society towards a revolutionary transformation. The titles give you some idea of how profound these critiques are. I don't think there's any reason at all why we shouldn't sort of be, in a sense, involved in this movement, but saying something rather different in terms of a solution than these other people are saying. Mainly Americans, not exclusively, mainly Americans. Most of this comes from the States. And there really is a sort of plethora of this material about now. If it's being published, presumably it's being bought and sold and read. So, I think Paddy's idea is well worth sort of examining and seeing whether there's any mileage in it for us.
Thank you, Owen. You don't have to come back on that, Paddy, or I go forward again.
Nothing to say really. It's Howard said it very well.
Okay, then thank you, Paddy. Right, Carla's next then. Hey, Carla.
Hi, evening, comrades, and thanks, Paddy, for great talk. I want to comment on what Steve said, because up until then, I was thinking, yeah, great, you know, what a wonderful way to put over the case for socialism if we go through this, as Howard mentioned, the flavour of the month. However, I agree with Steve that we have to be so careful about, you know, who's pushing these, like you say, electric cars, and these are big capitalists, and we have to look at what agenda is behind what's going on. And I think he's right in saying that very, very probably warfare and what's going on with weapons and nuclear weapons and war is probably a much bigger threat, or would seem a much more immediate threat than climate change. Now, I'm not denying climate change. Of course I'm not. But as Steve said, we're not ecologists. We're not scientists. We don't know. We don't know for sure. And we do have to have a look behind those agendas and maybe look at what is even more immediate. You know, we have we can pick and choose actually what we can use to put forward the case for a socialist society. But I do think that possibly, yeah, you know, we can do it all. As I say, what the flavour of the month is, that's fine. You know, COP, when we do the COP thing, yeah, that's what we're going to focus on. But yes, I do think that Steve is right, and I think that there is a much more immediate threat, and that is the threat of war and nuclear stuff. Thanks.
Yeah, so I can just come in there just a second, Brian. Just on the thing about I wondered about this when Steve was saying it, and now Carlos sort of reminded me this thing about agendas, who's pushing electric vehicles in the UK. I noticed a news item. Anybody living near Sunderland will already know this, but Nissan is massively expanding its facilities there to produce electric cars. They've gone in with Renault and some other car companies. They've all done this basically because they're not tooled up enough to do it by themselves. So someone else is building a massive EV battery facility in Sunderland as well, because electric cars are no use without batteries. So if a country doesn't produce its own batteries, it's going to have to buy them from someone else, and you're going to end up in this sort of situation where you're reliant on a foreign power for your EV batteries as well as your energy. So there's a sort of political dimension to this, but it occurred to me that to a large extent, electric vehicle industry is replacing the old internal combustion industry. So it's not new money as such. It's not a new industry. It's not capitalism reinventing itself. It's capitalism replacing one set of technologies with another set of technologies. So, I do remember some years ago, many years ago, actually, there was a video that people were promoting called "Who Killed the Electric Car?" And some of you might remember that. And it was all about how, you know, electric car technology or production was killed off by the existing car companies who obviously didn't want it, and the oil companies who even more obviously didn't want it. But it's being forced on, you know, it's being forced on society now by legislation. Just the other day, Royal Dutch Shell was ruled I think a Dutch court ruled that Shell had to reduce its carbon emissions by 45% in the next 9 years. So that's now a sort of legally binding thing on Shell, unless they move their operations out of Holland. I don't know if they'll do that. Just on the thing about nuclear war, I think most people's perception is that there hasn't been a nuclear war since 1945. Possibly because humans are managing, well, to manage it, essentially. They're finding ways of avoiding wars breaking out into nuclear exchanges. And it seems to have worked since 1945. So I think perhaps people would think that, you know, there's always a risk, but, you know, the chances are humans will go on managing that. You can't say that about the environment. That's why I think it's such a strong argument. You can't. There's no managing capitalism, you know, for the reasons, you know, already given that Adams alluded to. You know, there is no managing capitalism. It's got to grow and keep growing. There's nothing you can do about that. So I think if another war starts up somewhere between nuclear powers, it might rise back up the agenda. But at the moment, as Howard says, the environment is definitely flavour of the month. Thank you.
Thank you for that, Paddy. We've got Dougie again now. What do you, Dougie?
Yeah, I was interested. I agree with a lot of what Carl has said, really. You know, I mean, even Sky News has got a climate programme or whatever where they discuss things like Bangladesh, where 5 million people have moved to Delhi and living in slums because the water has risen in Bangladesh and they've lost their farms. Some farmers have moved 5 times in the last few years, and then a lot of people move to India thinking they can eat a life, and they'll live in poverty in shanty towns or whatever. So, I mean, climate change, I mean, the temperature of the sea around Bangladesh has gone up by 1 degree, and that means that the water's risen, really. So climate change is a thing for them, right? You know, so but I agree that capitalists will try and make money on the environmental things, you know, sell electric cars and have wind farms and do things to make money. So I mean, we can point all that out to people, right? I mean, I agree with Carla on that, right? You know, but as war, I mean, there's been wars raging in Syria and the Yemen, conventional wars that have killed more people probably than the nuclear war we had in 45 or whatever, and wars are an ever present threat, so we should talk about that as well, really, you know, not just the flavour of the month, the climate change or whatever. That's all we're just
right. Thank you for that, Dougie. Before we carry on with the speaking queue, and before I forget, actually, in regards to the continuing introduction of electric vehicles, the latest one is Ellesmere Port, Vauxhall, Ellesmere Port. They're going to produce electrical vans. Now, I do know, right, that some forward ordering has gone in this instance. Ironically, with British Gas have ordered 500 electric vans off Vauxhall. And they've already started the installation of the electric facilities with their drivers, the current drivers who they've allocated the vans to. I'm saying this because right opposite me is a David who works at British Gas, and he's had a plug-in put in, which just goes to show that when it comes to accumulation of wealth, right? The capitalists have hit it right on the head. The irony in this instance is British gas, you know, using electric vehicles. Off to Freddie now. Thank you, Freddie.
Yeah, good evening, comrades. I mean, I have to say, not unsurprisingly, Paddy's address, very interesting indeed. But I need to reflect. Some of you are here tonight. When I was speaking last Friday night, I was talking about what sort of new ideas, etc. Is there anything sort of new, etc., that perhaps we could come up with? And I remember going along the lines of, you know, something that perhaps we haven't tried before in terms of trying to get the party case across in one format or another, but maybe not in the same formats that we've done previously. And reflecting on tonight, I mean, clearly there are ideas coming forward here. And whilst I'd substantially agree with what Carla and Steve Finch was saying earlier, and Mark Zed, and that really it's a variation in a theme, in the sense that if we look at taking this environmental movement, and I remember mentioning that last week about the environmental movement. That when Greta Thunberg, started becoming more prominent, there was articles written in the Standard about the environmental movement, etc. And Glenn Morris has written, I think, some excellent articles on the environment. And you know, there's no doubt that the environment is taking pride of place at the moment in some areas. I mean, I recently watched a program on Netflix. It's called Seaspiracy. Some of you might have seen it. Now, I mean, I don't have any doubt as to the accuracy of that and the way in which the sea is getting exploited. And for example, I mean, I didn't know that the sea actually absorbed sort of more carbon or life in the sea, like corals, etc., apparently absorbs more carbon than the rainforests. And I also remember a few years back, and if I'm wrong here, if I'm wrong, Paddy, you can correct me, because I think that there was also a documentary style, I think it was called Cowspiracy, where where it was claimed there, I can't remember the percentage, but it was something like 20-odd% of methane, I think it was, is produced in agriculture from cows, etc. And I think, if I recall correctly, Paddy, you mentioned it in some article maybe some months ago now, but I remember that. And the point I'm trying to get at here, when we're talking, and we've looked at things in the past over the years, and if we take the CND, for example, the party did a pamphlet about the CND. It's been pamphlets about war and such like also, I know. But the way CND came and went, and, you know, one would hope that the environmental movement will not come and go to the same extent. But CND didn't do a great deal in the sense that, you know, they were only opposed to nuclear wars. They weren't opposed. I mean, conventional wars have been killing more people than the nuclear war. So, you know, as interesting as this is, and that we respond to it, the parties responded to various issues that grabbed people's attention over the years, whether it be homelessness or whatever. And as I say, I don't believe that we should concentrate our efforts any more hugely than what we already do on the environment. It's capitalism in its entirety that is the problem. And yes, once we recognise that the environment keeps deteriorating the way it does, and the tsunamis, etc., and all that keep coming along, it's a dire state of affairs. But so are wards. Thanks.
Just briefly on that Freddie was saying. The Seaspiracy documentary was made by the same producers who made the Cowspiracy thing. Personally, I don't think putting the word spiracy or the half-word spiracy in the title is actually that helpful, really, but never mind. It wasn't the same people that did both. It was the same producers. Anyway, one of the things... This is one of the problems about this kind of argument is, like, you see these kind of statistics, we could feed the world's population on a quarter of the land if we took meat production out of it. Well, yes, it's all right. It's true, or it probably is true, but arguments like that don't actually work unless you put them in the context of the profit system, because what would really happen is if you take land out of use for meat farming, it's not going to be used to grow grains for protein for people. It's most likely going to be used for biofuels, and in fact, in various areas of the world, that is what's happening. Or it's being used for things like palm oil, for the food industry. So this is what I find frustrating about environmental arguments that just make it look as if it's a kind of black and white thing, that if you stop doing this, then this will happen. No, if you stop doing this, then some third thing will happen that makes more money for somebody. And this is, I think... what we need to keep stressing, that it's not just an environmental issue out of context. It's in the context of a profit producing society, and that will put the money into whatever's profitable, even if it's against the interests of most human beings. So these are the sort of things that we need to argue, that I think a lot of environmentalists are just very naive about. Thanks.
Okay. It's Steve again. Go on, Steve.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. I hope I didn't give the impression that I was against talking about being involved with campaigns to convince environmentalists. Certainly not the case. As I'm actively working on propaganda for that. At the moment, so and involved with the arrangements to go to COP26. So I wasn't trying to belittle any ideas that we should engage with environmentalists. But I just wanted to point out these other things. And let me stress as well, by the way, nor have I got a fixation with nuclear weapons. I've got a fixation with weapons. Because this is, as other people have pointed out, there've been millions and millions of people that have died because of these capitalism's wars and the proxy wars that are going on. If I could just go back to the issue of the environment and why would socialism be more preferable? As far as the environment is concerned, and this thing about we can't possibly support a population with the Western lifestyle in inverted commas, and of course I've always argued that that socialism is a far preferable system, because we wouldn't be obsessed with this idea of in individual ownership of the nonsense that I've got sitting around me at the moment in my private home, all this so-called consumer durables that I've got, which have been forced on me because we've got this atomized social system. We should be pointing out to people that, first of all, in a socialist society, there wouldn't necessarily be all of this this emphasis on individual possession of goods, and not only that we would, in a socialist society, we would be creating stuff that wasn't meant to fall to bits within 7 years or 8 years or whatever it is. And we wouldn't be involved in the, and this is going back to capitalist economics again, the Marxian economics again, we wouldn't be have a system which insisted on constant expansion. And we would go for something that looked like a steady state economy as far as the consumption of natural resources is concerned. And that includes careful recycling, careful design, all of the things that capitalism isn't doing. It just isn't doing because it's got to make things for a market, it's got to make stuff to sell, and it's got to make stuff to sell next week and next week and next week, never ending. And this is the disaster for the environment. I'll stop at that. Thank you.
Yeah, can I just add something to what Steve said there?
Thank you, Steve. Yeah, go ahead, buddy.
Agree with what Steve said, and just to say that I think what everybody's doing out there is they're concentrating on the problem and not on the solution because they don't know. So I think that's what we need to be doing much more is what Steve described, is saying, look, we've got, this is the solution, this is how it could work, this is why it would work, and this is why it's better than capitalism. So, you know, rather than focusing on the problem like everybody else does, you know, focus on the solution.
Yes, I go along with that. That's what I try to do on the street stall every Saturday. All right, okay, Carla.
Hi, yeah, I mentioned the car industry. Now, that's interesting because a few years ago, it was all diesel cars. Yes, diesel's better than petrol. And now we've got electric. Now, again, agendas. It's the car industry. They're doing electric now, but in another 10 years, it'll be electric cars uses too much resources. Or we'll go for hydrogen. Now, they probably have the means to make hydrogen-run cars now, but they don't want to do that because that means in a few years' time, they can get everyone to get rid of their cars and buy new ones. So it's and all this, you know, waste, all these cars that are no longer, inverted commas, environmentally friendly, they're all in the dump. They're all in landfill. They're all in car dump places. So it's, you know, I don't trust the buggers. They'll come up with something new and say, it's because of the environment. And they just want to keep changing things so you can buy more cars. You can buy another car and another car. And then also what was mentioned was, Paddy also mentioned biofuel. My sister sent me an email and it just says 150 million meals. This was in the Independent. 150 million meals a year thrown away rather than given to the hungry because of a 600 million government subsidy. So edible food is actually being turned into biogas rather than family meals. So there you go, biogas. Some corporation is making a lot of money and families are going without food. I mean, not that they should have to eat waste food, because in socialism they wouldn't, but this is what's going on in the world. It's pretty disgusting. Thanks.
Yeah, if I can just come back on that a sec. You're right, aren't you? Obviously, you know, once they've flogged electric cars to everybody, they'll obviously go, no, you want to get rid of that. Now we're going to go over to hydrogen. I mean, there are issues with electric cars. I mean, where's all the electricity going to come from for a start? I mean, most of it's still globally. Most electricity is produced by fossil. So there's a big problem. So there's going to be an absolutely gigantic expansion of either renewables and or nuclear, which carries issues of its own. At the moment, hydrogen's a long way off because at the moment, and I happen to have heard this yesterday, most of the hydrogen is there's two ways of producing hydrogen. One is by via fossil fuels, extracting it from from natural gas. And this account, this is called blue hydrogen, and this accounts for 95% of the hydrogen that's produced industrially in the world. And the other type, the other way to extract hydrogen, as you know, water is made up of hydrogen and oxygen, and it's to extract hydrogen from directly from water through some sort of catalyzing process, electrolysis. This is very expensive, and it only accounts for 5% of the green hydrogen that's currently produced. So even if you leave aside the problems of distribution and supply and fueling stations for hydrogen, you're talking about 20, 30 years before it's even starts to look viable. At the moment, and I know this because the panel was talking about this yesterday on the New Scientist online event, at the moment hydrogen is being sort of earmarked for certain processes that you cannot use electricity for. And one example they gave was steel production, where you need very high temperatures, and it's always been done by fossil. The only feasible way to do that is with hydrogen. You just can't use electricity for that. So hydrogen is going to be earmarked for certain niche things that you cannot use electricity for. But it still goes back to the question, where do you get all this electricity from? And also, how do you recycle these electric batteries once they've got to the end of their lives? Because unlike ordinary car batteries, these things are made up of thousands of individual cells that have to be dismantled manually. These are lithium ion cells that tend to explode, as you will have noticed with one of the Samsung phones that came out. So these lithium ion cells are quite explosive, and at the moment the only way to recycle these batteries is manually, by hand, one at a time. So incredibly expensive. So again, you know, capitalism has got itself a solution in electric cars without thinking long term about the problems of recycling the end of the of the product cycle. And so it goes on. So the things that, you know, Carl is saying, I mean, these are the problems with capitalism. You know, yes, it will keep on trying to flog us stuff. We know that. And it will keep driving technology without thinking ahead to how it, you know, its impact on the waste stream at the other end. So, yeah.
Thank you for that, Paddy and Carla. Right, now we go to Mike Brown. Hello, Mike.
Hiya, Brian. I want to get away from the flavour of the hour, talking about transportation systems. Unlike what Paddy said at the start, I quite like some of the ideas that Adam had, in particular, working out what actually humans need these days, not a Western lifestyle, not a US lifestyle, not an Ethiopian lifestyle, but how much humans need, and working that out for a proper pamphlet. I'd like to see the people who read Capital in the party, and there must be about a couple of dozen of them, try to work out and explain why capitalism or the capitalist system is too bad for the planet, why it won't work infinitely in the planet. Explain this carefully and taking regard for all the flavors of the month that have been coming around, even flavors of the hour on this program. But we really need to explain that to humans worldwide, why the operation of the capitalist system will kill off most forms of life. Probably about half the humans, but we don't know that. And Adam said, well, how about some articles on what it would be like if capitalism continued? Well, you probably have quite a lot of that. I tend not to try and focus on that because it gets too depressing, having been studying the change in the climate for the last 40 years and knowing that we're on a runaway and there's very little chance of us stopping. We need to try and explain how to be a world without China, Russia, and American capitalists running the world. Those three are the three big nuclear powers. They can stop and start wars at will. But we need to try and explain why this is not going to go away. this is not flavour of the month or the hour. This is flavour for the next generation or two. But there should be enough people who can explain Marx and economics in modern day English so it's understandable to most people and it can be translated into most languages. Why the operation of the capitalist system is finite, it uses up too much of the planet. Don't let you go bogged down into, that hydrogen and you'll have problems. Electricity, electric cars will have problems. They all problems like that. We need to concentrate on the planet and the timeline we've got because we're on a we're on a very strict timeline. It's no good talking about how we can talk to people about this. Looking at that COP leaflet I've seen put in, that Paul Edwards has put in, he's talking about capitalism in abstract form. And that's not going, nobody's going to read that. Thank you.
So I can just come.
You might.
So let's just come back on that, Brian. Something that Mike said about being on a strict timeline. I think one of the problems. I mean, Mike will agree with this. Is that of course we don't know. We can't say. It's been said several times. We can't say that capitalism is going to destroy the biosphere or it's going to destroy the planet. One of the X factors in this, or the factor X's in this, is tipping points. We're at a point really with the climate where it's anybody's guess. We can't really say, but there are things that there are things called feedback loops. Mike knows all about this. One of the feedback loops we're seeing is with the Northern Jet Stream. In the last week or so, they've had temperatures of nearly 50 degrees in Canada, forest fires, people dying of heat stroke in Canada. A few years ago, the same thing happened in Russia. This is because of the jet stream going really pretty much out of control. This is one of the effects of a feedback loop. I think that this is the trouble, isn't it, with the climate, is we're at a place where we've never been before, not in modern human history anyway, and, the scientists don't know what's going to happen. So this is what's quite worrying, if the climate was understood well enough, we perhaps wouldn't need to have this discussion, but, it's not, so it is very alarming. Mike said something else. Oh, yeah, I know what it was. Talking about, why we need to explain to people that why it is that capitalism depends on infinite growth. I mean, in point of fact, Steve and I have been sort of working on a leaflet to make that very point. We're hoping to produce that. But also I think the other side of that is that, well, capitalists need to make the argument that they can, produce sustainable growth or they can't argue that for zero growth because, the very purpose of capitalism is growth. That's built into it. So they can't really argue for zero growth. So they've got to make a convincing argument for sustainable growth. So really the onus is on them rather than on us, I would say. We've simply got to say, look, capitalism is doing what it's always done and it's going to carry on doing that. So, we don't actually have to make the argument. They do. It's their job.
All right, thanks for that, Paddy. It seems that we've come to the end of the conversation, comrades. It's quarter past nine, and there's no further in speaking to. So I bring the meeting to an end. And with that, I'd like to thank all contributions. For a very interesting and stimulating discussion. Thank you.